Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for thousands upon thousands of men the world over afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. While medical researchers are learning more about this devastating condition in an effort to cure it, we're here to listen to your experiences, share them across borders, and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle this growing epidemic and put an end to it for future generations.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. I'm your host, Amir Karkouti. And today we have a very, very special guest. I had the pleasure of being his patient and also helping assist volunteer my time with some of the other people that are going through PFS, Mr. Dr. Erwin Goldstein. And let me tell you a little bit about him before I tell you a little bit about my connection with him. Dr. Erwin Goldstein has been involved with sexual dysfunction research since the late 1970s. His interests include penile microvascular bypass surgery, surgery for dyspareunia, physiologic investigation of sexual function in men and women, and diagnosis and treatment of sexual dysfunction in men and women. He's authored more than 325 publications in the field of sexual dysfunction, with over 20 consecutive years of funding by the National Institutes of Health in this area. He is also the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Sexual Medicine, the official journal of the International Society for Sexual Medicine, its regional affiliate societies, and the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. Dr. Erwin Goldstein has relocated to San Diego, that's where I live, where he's a director of sexual medicine at Alvarado Hospital. He's also the clinical professor of surgery at University of California at San Diego and director of San Diego Sexual Medicine, where he maintains his clinical practice. And this guy has done so much for the sexual medicine community. The guy is like the one of the main internationally known doctors, and I was so blessed to be able to work with him and be one of his patients. And just to keep going, let me tell you a little bit more. The World Association for Sexual Health awarded the gold medal to Dr. Goldstein in 2009 in recognition of his lifelong contributions to the field. And in 2012, he received the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health Award for distinguished service in women's health. And also in 2014, he received the ISSM Lifetime Achievement Award from the International Society for Sexual Medicine. Now, if that doesn't tell you a little bit about Dr. Erwin Goldstein and what he's done, then I don't know what does. The guy has so much history behind this. He's been around for so long. And here's what's crazy. When I went to go, let me tell you the story behind how it worked out with me. My body crashed. You know, I stopped taking finasteride about 3 months before I crashed, and I had no clue what was happening to my body because I didn't know that a drug could affect you like that. You know, so I had no clue what was happening. I didn't blame it on anything. I didn't have forums to go to because I wasn't on any drugs at the time, so I didn't know what drug to go look for on the forums. So I started to crash. She was my girlfriend at the time. Saw the changes in me right away. All of a sudden, I didn't want to have sex. I didn't want to be, touched. I would fall asleep at 7 o'clock. We went to Thailand together, and we were so excited. It was our first big trip out of the country, and every day I would fall asleep. There was things she wanted to do in the afternoon, and I would say, honey, I got to go to bed, and she got so frustrated, but she was, thank God, so loving about this whole thing. When we got back home, I wanted to do nothing. I didn't want to go to work. And I know there's a lot of people that were depressed. I was too tired to be depressed. I didn't even know that I should be depressed. I was exhausted. So it didn't even faze me to be depressed because I didn't have the energy to be depressed. But what I did do is I'd fall asleep every day super early. I'd sleep in. I didn't want to go to work. I used to work out 3-4 times a week, go running. I didn't want to do it, right? So I was so tired that I didn't want to go to a doctor to see what's wrong with me. I was so tired. I said, honey, let me just stay at home. I'll get better, I promise. And she took the reins and said, no, we got to figure this out. And there was a night, it was around midnight, she Googled sexual dysfunction, sexual problems, low libido, and like low energy. I don't know what she Googled, but Dr. Erwin Goldstein happened to come up. She put like low libido San Diego doctor or something like that. And he had a bunch of 5-star reviews, and I clicked on it, and of course I was skeptical. I didn't know who he was, and I was like, oh, it's one of those like doctors that's going to sell us a penis pump or something. I had no idea that he was one of the forefronts in sexual medicine. Well, anyway, I got to his office, and he asked for blood work, lab work before we got there, and I did all the stuff that he needed. And it's really, really cool when you go to his office. It's very extensive. Not only do you go to see him, you actually see a physical therapist too, who checks the muscles around your lower regions and makes sure that the muscles are strong, because it may not be something that could be physical. It could be emotional as well. It could be something that chemical. You know, I took a drug. He doesn't put any stone unturned, as they say. So he first had me go to a physical therapist, and they put all these stuff on me and tested my muscles. And they, realized that wasn't really the issue. And then they also take you to a therapist, which is awesome, a psychologist, because they want to see if there's something going on with you psychologically. What if, I'm perfectly fine and there's some mental blocks that are stopping me from having, sex with my wife or whatever it is, And that didn't seem to be the case. So when I went to Dr. Goldstein, we sat down, and really, really interesting. We sat down, he was looking at me, and he, for the life of him, couldn't figure out what's going on. He's looking at my charts. And at that time, I didn't tell him I took finasteride. It didn't occur to me to tell him. So he's looking and he's going, well, your levels here look really low. And wow, that looks really, really low. This is very unusual. And he looks back in his notes and goes, you're not on any medicines, are you? I'm like, no, I'm not on any. I haven't been on medicines in a long time. He goes, okay, well, tell you what, let me ask you, have you ever by any chance been on finasteride? And it didn't even occur to me. And I said, oh, yeah, I've been on that for about 6 years. And he put his fist down and went, damn it. And he was like so upset, because he knew at that point like what my road's going to look like. He knew. And he was, and I loved it, because he was honest and he was passionate about it. And he didn't want to sugarcoat this thing. And he went right to work. He goes, here's the deal. Let me tell you what you're probably going through right now. He said, you are totally exhausted. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm always exhausted. He goes, your wife's beautiful. I go, yeah, she's beautiful. He goes, yeah, you don't want to have sex with her right now, do you? I'm like, no, I don't. And he goes, I'm like, and I think she's the hottest woman in the world, and I can't get it up. I don't know. And he goes, yeah, you can't get it up. And then he started to literally tell me what was happening to me. Literally, it wasn't like he was it was literally like he was a fortune teller or something. It was the most strangest, most surrealist thing for him to tell me exactly what's going on with me, because he knew actually better than I did what was happening to my body. And the good news is when I went to go make the appointment, he said, bring your wife, because it's going to be eye-opening for her as well. So bring your wife, bring her in, and make sure that she knows what's going on. When I brought her, she was just nodding her head going, oh my goodness, this is exactly what he's going through. Now, I want to make it very, very clear. There's a lot of people out there that are skeptical about what I'm going through, or, there's people on Reddit and some social media sites, they say, oh, that's a crock of crap. It doesn't work that way. Here's what I want to tell all those people that are skeptic. I did not know anything about finasteride. I did not know anything. I wasn't going on forums. I just was having the symptoms. I did not know anything about it. There's a lot of people that say, oh, well, everybody goes through that. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But here's the thing. I had a really good diet. I was in the best shape of my life. I was not depressed. I had a wonderful relationship with my friends, my family. I would go out all the time. So when this hit me, it came from nowhere. All right? So this was not something that I got, and all of a sudden I started looking, Googling it up and going, oh my goodness, it is finasteride, and going on the, you know, the forums going, oh yeah, I have this, this, and this. Do I have this too? No, it wasn't like that at all. I did not care to go online. I didn't care to see if, you know, to verify it with others, or like, you know, to compete with others and see if that's exactly what I have. None of that. It was nothing like that. I just started to get the symptoms, and it happened to me. If my wife did not look up Irwin Goldstein, I don't know where I would be right now, to be honest with you. And here's another thing. I actually, you know, my wife Holly, she actually got me to go to another doctor, and he was this boutique, you know, he does testosterone replacement therapy doctor. And I went to him first, and man, he was injecting me with steroids. And I was, at the time, I wanted to have kids, and thank goodness I didn't continue. It just happened to be a couple weeks later, I met Dr. Irwin Goldstein. He's like, get off that stuff. Don't ever do it. We're going to do it the right way. And speaking of Dr. Irwin Goldstein, he's now on the air. So let's just cut it real short right now, because I want to talk to him. And let's see. Dr.
I'm
Goldstein,
here.
Are you there?
Yeah, thank you for doing this. This is very cool.
Oh, man, I am so excited. I mean, for me, the most exciting thing is, it's not only, you know, I'm doing this podcast to get the word out, but you're my actual doctor. So for me, it's like I'm so blessed. You know, before we continue, I just want to say thank you so much for everything you've done. You know, before you got on the phone, I was kind of telling them about my story with you and also all the stuff that you've done. So thank you so much for getting on the air with me.
Amir, you're a rock star, and it's an honor to work with you, and I'm so sorry that you have a problem with this medication. That's the first very important thing, but now that you have this, it's important to resume the best quality of life that you can. So that's what we're trying to achieve.
I totally agree with you, and thank you again. And before we continue, can you tell us a little bit about yourself for the people that are listening?
Sure. So, wow, tell me about myself. So I'm a healthcare provider who, prior to going into medicine, I was a biomedical engineer, aerospace and mechanical engineer, electrical engineer. And then I decided to go into medicine, and in the process, I ended up being a urologist, but I've always not stopped being the engineer. So I liked urology for its ability to take engineering principles and use them. For example, like just an erection is a good example. I mean, in the flaccid state, the penis has no sort of hardness. In the erect state, it gets hard. And the physiology that allows that to happen and sustain itself during sexual activity, and then to lose that so you're comfortable, and then to get that back when you want, it's pretty interesting stuff. And it involves many hydraulic engineering principles, so it's always been like a good tie for me. So I've always, essentially in my medical career, only done sexual medicine for men and women, and it's been a challenge because not other doctors do this, so we've had to find our way to create a space. Like here in our hospital, we have a department called the Department of Sexual Medicine. But that's an unusual department status. Most hospitals don't have that, but we're blessed to have that.
Oh, that's awesome. And just to give you a heads up, before you got on, I literally spent about 8 minutes talking about all the stuff that you've, all the awards that you won, and your background, because I'm sure you
probably
don't.
Well, let's avoid all that stuff. Let's try and help some people. Are we going to take calls, Amir, or how do you want to do this?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure if we're going to take calls. If someone wants to call in, that would be awesome. And let me give you the phone number for the people that are listening. The phone number is 718-508-9136. Again, that's 718-508-9136. You know what? Until we get calls, I do have a bunch of questions that I got from online, people that have emailed me. And I was going to see if you would be able to share some of the wisdom that you have behind PFS.
Mira would be fabulous. I think that's a great idea. So these are real life questions. So let's consider it as if a patient's on the line.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, these are real life questions that I asked for. And first of all, let's start with, what is post-finasteride syndrome?
So post-finasteride syndrome. there's this horrible medication called 5-alpha reductase inhibitor finasteride that purports to be a inhibitor of the conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, and that there is this condition, androgenic alopecia or male pattern baldness, where dihydrotestosterone in the scalp skin, if it's at a higher level, is injurious to hair follicles. So the logic then proceeds that if you can have a strategy that reduces dihydrotestosterone in the scalp skin, you could have hair grow. This wasn't a drug that was developed, or Propecia or finasteride, wasn't developed for hair loss. It actually was approved in 1992 by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of men with difficulty urinating due to enlarged prostate. And the logic there was if you reduce dihydrotestosterone in the prostate, eventually the prostate would shrink in size, and that would allow you to urinate better. It took many, many months for this strategy to work, and it wasn't a very successful therapy in general compared to other therapies. But they observed through serendipity the hair growth of some of the men, and then they, Merck, the company developing this, re-strategized the use of finasteride for younger men as opposed to the older men with prostate. And in the process of getting this approved in 1998, when it was approved, so 6 years after the initial FDA approval, basically became more popular for its use in hair or treating male pattern baldness or androgenic alopecia. The dilemma of the drug, there's multiple ones, but the dilemma of the drug is it's not a specific 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. There are multiple really critical substrate product interactions that use 5-alpha reductase enzyme that are all inhibited, and that's one of the tragic parts of this. There's strategies that engage many important structures in mood and memory, cognition, that are inhibited from their action due to taking of the medication. I'm not going to get into the science of all this, but if you're interested, I could take you into the science. But it's far broader in its inhibition of the substrate to product reaction of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. More importantly, even if you just stay on the topic of reducing dihydrotestosterone in the body, there are some very critical features that are missing. It's a dire equation. Like, if you believe androgenic alopecia is due to elevated dihydrotestosterone, and that is bad for scalp hair, where is the evidence that in patients receiving this product that they've even had dihydrotestosterone measured and found to be elevated? In other words, they've never established, or the doctors who provide this never established the basis. Where's the endocrinologic proof that their androgenic alopecia is due to elevated dihydrotestosterone? It's not established. You say, hair loss? Here's this drug. Its only mechanism is stopping dihydrotestosterone, but you've never proved dihydrotestosterone was the problem in the first place. So that's, to me, a big error. The next thing is, of course, it's not a reversible inhibitor. Like Viagra is a reversible inhibitor of an enzyme. This is an irreversible inhibitor of an enzyme. It inhibits by causing what's called a suicide substrate. It's a lethal thing to the enzyme. So you actually destroy the enzyme. I mean, just even knowing that, you'd question, gee, should I really do that to my body? The other thing is the body reacts to the drug. The body increases the synthesis of an androgen receptor. And you don't even know if the androgen receptor you synthesize due to use of this product is the same androgen receptor you once started with. So you actually can introduce an entirely different protein in your body from use of this product. There's a host of issues, but at the end of the day, the bottom line is this is a dangerous drug. It has a lot of scientific issues. And then there are men who, when they are on the product, they may or may not have side effects, but when they stop the product, they get a syndrome, a series of symptoms that they complain even though they're not on the product. So that latter condition has been termed PFS, post-finasteride syndrome. We could argue there are probably better terms to describe this syndrome. but it's devastating, it's bothersome, it's humiliating, it's embarrassing. There are people who have professions who can't do their professions because of this. There are people who used to have good, healthy sex lives who don't have sex lives. There are people who have mood issues they've never had before, and on and on. It's limited, recognized in our healthcare community, and it should be better recognized. And I suspect that as we do more and more research, we'll better define the PFS. But it's a genuine, true phenomenon from having used this drug. There are other syndromes of like, for example, if you took a depression medication, SSRI, and you stopped the SSRI, there are people who have post-SSRI problems. So there's a condition called PSSD, post-SSRI sexual dysfunction, that we see. So finasteride is an example of, or PFS is an example of a health problem that occurs beyond stopping the drug because the drug itself has unusual medical characteristics.
You know, while you were talking, I have to say it is a very lonely feeling as well, because when I stopped taking it, I had no idea that a drug that I took 3 months ago could have done it. So it never occurred to me to think, oh, it must be finasteride. And there's a, you know, so if it wasn't for my wife, Holly, to say, hey, you need to go to this doctor, I would have been on my own. I went to so many doctors, I had no idea what this was. And like you were mentioning, it's such a crazy thing that a lot of doctors don't know what this is.
Yeah, so I just opened up my computer the laundry list of things that finasteride blocks. So it blocks testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. It blocks androstenedione to 5-alpha dihydroandrosterone. It blocks progesterone to dihydroprogesterone. It blocks deoxycorticosterone to 5-alpha dihydrodeoxycorticosterone. On and on. Corticosterone to 5-alpha dihydrocorticosterone. Aldosterone to 5-alpha dihydro. All of that is stopped. And those end up to be substrates of even other things, like allopregnanolone, which is an extremely important brain neurochemical. And on and on. This product is irrationally conceived, basically. That's the best word I could say.
So all the things that it's blocking, do those have some sort of function in the body that's important? Because all that stuff is very scientific for me, but for a layperson, what's important that those shouldn't be blocked, or what's the importance of them being blocked?
Let's take an example. Allopregnanolone, which is, there's a sex steroid called progesterone, very important for women for maintenance of menstrual periods and pregnancy. It's what happens after ovulation in a woman's second part of her reproductive cycle. But progesterone in a male exists, and progesterone is converted through 5-alpha reductase to 5-alpha dihydroprogesterone, which then eventually turns to allopregnanolone. Allopregnanolone is a huge part of memory and mood and cognition. And, you know, we can draw the cerebral spinal fluid through a spinal tap of somebody on or off finasteride and show that a substance like allopregnanolone doesn't exist in the CSF. So in the brain, you don't have that product. So that's all a side effect, undiscussed, unmentioned by your healthcare provider, that's going to happen for you to take this hair loss drug.
Wow. Let me ask you, are you open to another question?
I'm Amir, I'm into this. You got me going. Very
passionate. All right, fair enough. I have some people that say I've been on finasteride for 1 week and I'm getting these symptoms. Can that actually happen? I was on it for 6 years, and I'm just curious, like, what have you seen with
this
medicine?
I actually saw a patient in the office yesterday who started when it came out, 1998, so that's 17 years ago. And actually, he was still on finasteride, despite having all the problems. And he wanted a strategy of how to stop finasteride in a way that he wouldn't get the so-called crash and then end up with PFS. It's an interesting conversation. It's a little more sophisticated than how do you manage a person who was on it and then gets off it, like yourself, Amir. This is a person who wants to get off it, but wants to get off it in a clever way. So it's a more sophisticated question. So I guess your question is, can you take short periods of time versus long periods of time? And we've clearly seen patients. I saw a patient just a few days ago. We see way too many of these patients, by the way. So a guy was on it for just 1 month. He was given a prescription for 1 month use, and during his month he realized a whole bunch of issues. The prime thing was libido. He used to stare at a woman with a fancy top and a tight bottom and all that and get very interested. And he could look at a woman after 1 month on the drug, and he would look at, you might as well look at a tree or a car or a sign on a restaurant. I mean, it was not linking. Intellectually, he may have said it caused interest, but it wasn't linking physiologic interest. That was just 1 month on the drug. But I've seen people with 1 week on the drug have problems.
You have. And you mentioned something. You said it's different between people that are on it and off of it. So are you telling me that if I was on it, I may not have had PFS, or how does that work?
Well, that's a great question. So all the kids on the medicine who want to get off it, as opposed to just stopping it, they're asking questions. What if I just taper it off? What if I take dihydrotestosterone cream and normalize my dihydrotestosterone? Because anyone on the medication has essentially no dihydrotestosterone. So an interesting question is, and needs to be addressed with data, what if you stopped but you took Andractum or the medication to raise DHT prior to stopping, so that when you stopped, you could have the DHT present? These are questions that we're trying to answer. So the gentleman who was on it for 17 years who wanted to prevent PFS in the crash, what we did is we're in the process of normalizing his DHT. He's going to get a few DHT blood test values. When they're normal, we'll then stop his finasteride. So I don't know if it's going to help, but it's a theory that we're trying to test.
And is this fairly new, all this stuff, or have you been dealing with finasteride for a very long time and it's now actually getting out into the public? Is this fairly new,
I'm interested in the
idea about what finasteride is doing?
Yeah.
Or has this been going on for a very long time?
Yeah, so the drug's been around now 17 years for hair loss. From time to time, we have heard people say they had this over the years, but I have like an exclusive 100% devotion and dedication to people with sexual problems, and that's where we get linked into PFS and PFS patients and all of that. I think my awareness of PFS goes back, it's got to be, 7-8 years ago, and somehow my name got introduced into the propitiahelp.com website. So that's where the acceleration of seeing patients started being realized. We were seeing on occasion patients, because we do anything and everything that's sexual, so PFS patients were coming to us. But it's not to the amount of patients or the frequency of phone calls since going on that website. It's truly a shocking, scary concept that so many people have this.
This is going to be a very interesting question, because I tend not to get on forums because it really bothers me when I hear all the stories, and I already know what I'm going through. But there's a lot of forums out there where people are trying to tell others to stop taking Propecia, and there's a really high level of skepticism. They say, look, you guys are a bunch of baloney. You can't, you didn't lose your job because you took finasteride. You took your job because you're a loser. I hear people say depression doesn't happen from it. Your loss of libido could have been of many other factors. Give me a break. This drug can't do that. There's a lot of that out there. And it's really frustrating because someone like me, I had no clue that a drug could do that. I wasn't going on forums to see that particular drug was doing it. I just felt the symptoms. I was so ignorant about it. What would you say to all the skeptics that say, look, come on, you're losing your job. You're losing, you're not talking to your family members. You're losing your libido. Give me a break. It could be a host of a bunch of other things.
So, Amir, yes, having depression has many risk factors, and yes, having sexual dysfunction has many risk factors, and yes, losing your job can be associated with many risk factors. But the interesting part of a condition is that it has symptoms that other people experience. So multiple sclerosis, you know, many, many people get eye problems, and many people get headaches, and many people have X, Y, and Z conditions. So when you have a syndrome where common symptoms exist in people, and they were all associated with taking a medication, then it's more likely than not a real phenomenon. And the bottom line, it needs to be established by evidence-based medicine, and we're now seeing multiple reports on the adverse effects long-term, even when you stop the medication, of the ingestion of this horrible medication, the 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. And I just have to say, I could give you now a whole series of PDFs documenting this in human beings. So, you know, you need an evaluation. There, you could have taken Propecia and not have PFS, but you could. So you need an evaluation like any other medical issue.
Well, speaking of that, you said you can take finasteride and not have PFS. Is it a genetic disposition, or what makes it more prone for others and not for somebody else?
Fabulous question. More likely than not, it's genetic disposition, and we just don't know this at this end. But there are several outcomes of taking finasteride. One outcome is you take it, you stop it, your hair grows back, everything's fine, you have no problems. That's what most people wish. If they're going to take a medication for a certain reason, that's the outcome. There are also people who take the medication. They get a problem, but they don't relate it back to finasteride, and I think that may be what you and others experience. So they're not aware that there is that relationship. So you say, gee, I'm not interested in women anymore, but, you know, I'm 45. I'm getting older, so maybe that's excellent. Maybe it's my testosterone or prolactin or thyroid or something. It has nothing to do with finasteride. So there are people who take finasteride who get problems who never relate it. And now I guess the new science is saying, gee, it may be related. Let's learn more about it and let's try and help these people through logic and rational medical behavior, and then eventually develop consensed ways to do this, and eventually do trials where we can show efficacy in helping these patients who have these symptoms of PFS.
And speaking of helping, how are they going about it to find a resolution? Are you guys still really in the dark with this, or is there been some progress, or where is it at right now?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me if I am bothered and distressed by sexual, cognitive, and mood issues of PFS, should I expect to have them the rest of my life? Is there any hope for me? I haven't looked at our data. I would say more than half experience a better quality of life with appropriate treatment and management. First and foremost, it's a hormonal drug and it's a hormonal condition. And I think a special attention to hormones, including dihydrotestosterone, is very important. I think there are cognitive and mood things that you can do to help people. It doesn't always have to be pharmacologic. There are non-pharmacologic strategies that can be helpful. But the point is to acknowledge the existence and to work one-on-one on an individual basis with people is the way out of this mess. I don't think there's an exact formula that everybody with PFS should be on. But I think as it is with other medical conditions, establishing a rapport, a communication strategy with patients, listening to them, working with them to alleviate their problems and improve their life quality. And I think you can do that in a lot of people with PFS. You're an example.
Yeah, I was just going to say I'm a perfect example. I'll tell you the biggest thing that really helped me is, you know, I was really into weightlifting and running and things. When I was going through my crash, I didn't want to do anything. I was exhausted. I didn't want to look at. I was so tired when my wife told me you need to go see Dr. Irwin Goldstein. I said I'm too tired to get in the car. I didn't want to go over there to see you, to be honest with you. And luckily, she pushed me to go. But just the initial changes that I got from being with you allowed me to go back to my normal life. I think that's a huge one because the drugs, the prescriptions were a catalyst to get back to normal life, which I see a lot of your patients that call me, to talk to me about this, they say they stop living a normal life. And that in and of itself is devastating. You stop talking to your friends, your family, you stop going to work. So there, it starts the cascade, and it starts with what you've done with me. So I'm so blessed. My sexual function still doesn't work. My libido is completely gone, but I will take that over where I was at. 95% of the rest of what I had is completely disappeared. That's the one last part that I'm still working on. Luckily, knock on wood, my wife is pregnant. We're having a little daughter. And now actually going to that question is, why is the sexual part the last thing that seems to be the one that doesn't get fixed?
So that's an individual response, Amir. And let me just stop my answer by acknowledging that you, in your busy day, take your time to speak to patients that I've actually never even seen, that call me on the phone, that are desperate and want to speak to other people who have moved on and gotten some better life quality. So all of us on this radio blog need to thank you, first of all, for doing this and exposing this, but for actually speaking to patients. I thank you so much for that. You're a hero to them. Now, answering the question, it's an individual thing. In some people, the sexual part gets better quick. Libido is one of the first things to return, and the cognitive and mood parts are the last to happen. So, like I'm saying, this is an individual thing. We recognize contributions to the syndrome that are mood and cognitive and sexual. But among the sexual things, there's libido, erection, ejaculation, volume, orgasm intensity, and pleasure. I mean, there's a whole host of these things, and everybody seems to have different expressions of this PFS. So we then need to focus on individual patients. One last comment about libido. Among the more recent advances in how we manage men and women with sexual health problems, libido issues are something that we are getting more control of. Whether you know this or not, there's an FDA-approved drug for the first time in history that's non-hormonal that improves libido in women who are premenopausal. That's an exciting concept. How it works is exciting. How we can mimic it with other drugs is exciting. It's a new area of sexual medicine that has just received government approval, beyond erection issues, beyond premature ejaculation, or beyond Peyronie's disease. Well, by the way, I forgot to add Peyronie's disease to this. There's a whole bunch of people who now introduce shortening of the penis and curvature. So each person we have to work as an individual.
Yep, I agree to that, and also. Let me see. I'm looking down to my questions. I have a list of questions. One of the questions, another question I got is, testosterone seems to be the king of hormones. What's the big deal about DHT? That's the part that finasteride seems to reduce or remove. Why is that so important, the DHT part of hormones?
Well, sometimes men are only good in what they do because they have women behind them. A more political way to say that. Sometimes people function at a high level because they have an excellent partner. Testosterone is king because it has a good partner. It's called dihydrotestosterone. I mean, testosterone only works theoretically through dihydrotestosterone because the way sex steroids synthesize proteins is that they have to bind to a receptor. And the sex steroid that has a higher affinity for what's called the androgen receptor, the AR, is not testosterone, but it's actually dihydrotestosterone. So, I mean, the way you cure balding is by stopping the synthesis of a protein, theoretically, that's androgen-derived, by making DHT0. But you also stop many other proteins from being synthesized, which is why you have muscle problems, why you have bone problems, why you have sexual problems. So you're using a shotgun where a single bullet could work if you had a single bullet's action.
Okay, and you know, one of the things that I would hear a lot about is a 5-AR, is it an enzyme? The 5-AR, what I really like about Dr. Goldstein is when you sit with him in his office, he actually pulls up a computer and shows you the mechanism of actually what's happening. I don't know much of what's happening, but I'm so grateful that you show me a diagram of what's going on. And one of the things I always hear when I'm in your office is the 5-AR. What is that? Can you tell us, the listeners, what that is?
Well, I mean, substance A, this is basic biochemistry, converts to substance B through a facilitating protein called an enzyme. So I guess yeast takes flour and water and turns it into bread, I guess you could say. So yeast is the enzyme for that. For testosterone to convert to its active form, dihydrotestosterone, it must go through the enzyme 5-alpha reductase. So your body has to make that protein, and that protein has to be active for you to make any form of DHT. So there are people who have minimally active 5-alpha reductase. It's the Goldilocks thing. People have the correct amount of 5-alpha reductase activity, and people have high amounts of 5-alpha reductase activity. And theoretically, you could argue that those who have high 5-alpha reductase activity, they make more DHT for every time T turns into something. You know, T turns into one DHT molecule. T could turn into a half of a DHT molecule, or T could turn into five DHT molecules, depending on the activity of the enzyme. You could argue that people with baldness may have that version of 5-alpha reductase normally that is hyperly synthesizing dihydrotestosterone, and that's where hair loss comes from, too high levels. But nobody has to prove that, so we have no evidence that that's true. The bottom line is 5-alpha reductase is a critical part. But taking the drug, you lose the action of 5-alpha reductase. It lethally destroys the enzyme finasteride. It binds to the enzyme and kills it, which is a way different mechanism the way other enzyme inhibitors work, which reversibly block the enzyme. You compete for the active space in the enzyme, and if you block it, then you have an effect. But as soon as the concentration of the enzyme inhibitor, the drug that you're taking, disappears, so the enzyme works perfectly. But that's not the case with finasteride and 5-alpha reductase. 5-alpha reductase basically is like a machine gun. It kills the enzyme as opposed to just occupying a space. You know, like you can't enter a bus if there's 25 heavy people there. You have no space, so you can't get on. But if you take a machine gun and destroy the bus, then the bus doesn't work. That's the way finasteride works.
Wow. Well, that's the analogy that analogy just hit home for me. I get that, and I just want to say we're on the line with Dr. Irwin Goldstein, who's a world renowned sexual health doctor, and also my doctor as well. And for those that are, you know, this is another interesting question: is for those that are considering getting on it, they're saying, you know, I totally hear what Dr. Goldstein's saying, but I'm really losing my hair, and it's really embarrassing. I'm in my early 20s, what would you tell those people that are considering getting on Propecia?
I'm going to ask that question back to you because you were in that situation. If someone would have reviewed for you the risks of finasteride as in its use for hair loss as compared to their other FDA-approved products for hair loss beyond finasteride, what would you have done?
Oh, it's not a question. I would have never taken it. What's interesting is the reason I took it wasn't even for hair loss. My doctor prescribed it for me because my father had he had cancer. What's it called? Prostate cancer. So he told me at a young age I should be on it because I'm prone to having prostate cancer and this will help me in the future. Plus, I'm going to have the side effects. He told me I'm going to have is that I'm not going to lose my hair. That was the worst side effect. But had I even known that this could reduce my libido, you know, reduce my mental fog, libido, I still have mental fog to this day. All the other hosts of things that I got, loss of erection, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? And that, and the reason I'm asking you why I threw it back at you is because when I try to explain it to others that are considering getting on it, for some reason it doesn't compute in their mind that that could actually happen. And that's why I have you on the line to kind of show the scientific reason why this drug is so dangerous. It's been very interesting because people don't buy it when I tell them. It's like, don't get on this drug.
Amir, you said something very interesting, that there is a drug. It's approved by the government for a specific indication, and then you use that product for a specific indication. If you use a drug in an off-label indication, you're supposed to be warned of that. So the only on-label indications for finasteride are for urinating better and for prevention of male pattern baldness. There is no approved indication by the FDA for use of finasteride to prevent prostate cancer. There are some studies that show that even taking finasteride worsens prostate cancer and gets a form of prostate cancer that's more lethal than if you were to have never taken finasteride and had prostate cancer. So what you took was a very highly controversial off-label use and then suffered consequences without obvious any benefit. So the risk-benefit ratio for you was completely in risk with no opportunity for benefit unless you took it for the rest of your life, basically, I mean, a long-term indication. But there's no FDA-approved indication for stopping cancer.
No. I wish you were in my life, you know, 6 years ago to tell me that and honestly, the real reason why I came to you is my wife looked at a bottle or looked at the side effects online and she said, let me get this straight. If I touched this, it's really dangerous for me. And if I touch this and I'm pregnant, my kids can come out deformed. Or she read something like that. And she told me, but you ingest this every other day. How does that work? And that was my, you know, bulb that went in my head and said, this must be a really interesting drug. And that's why I got off of it. And
intuitive. She has great intuition. It's a classic female trait. It makes no sense. For women, the big warnings, women don't use. But men, use it every day for the rest of your life. Wow. Interesting.
So and speaking of, for the women that are listening on the show that are maybe either dating or married to somebody, what would you tell them? I'll tell you why I'm asking you this question. When my wife sat with me in your office, you literally looked me in the eye and said, you probably look at your wife like she's a tree or a really nice painting, don't you? And you hit it on the nail. I could not explain what was happening to me. I would look at my wife, she would undress, and she's one of the most hottest women I've ever met in my life. But it literally was very interesting, and that was all it was, where 5 years ago, 3 years ago, or whatever, it wouldn't even cross my mind. It would be, I need to go jump on this. But now you had said that to me at the office, and we both just sat there and said, that's exactly what it feels like for us. So for the wives and the girlfriends that are listening on the show, what would you tell them if their partner's dealing with PFS?
As I would the male or any conversation. I mean, you know, it goes back to, there are physicians who are interested in certain healthcare issues, and if there are sexual healthcare issues, find someone who specializes in healthcare issues that relate to sexual dysfunction. Not every doctor is comfortable with it, not every doctor knows it, but there's a field called sexual medicine. There's a journal called the Journal of Sexual Medicine. I was the editor for that for 11 years. I'm now editor of Sexual Medicine Reviews. So there's this entity. There's an International Society for Sexual Medicine. There's regional societies for sexual medicine. For anyone interested, find a sexual medicine doctor in your regional area and work with them and get better. You don't bring your Volkswagen into a Porsche dealer. If you have a sexual medicine problem, find someone who specializes in it.
Yeah, that's great advice. And if you have the opportunity to, you know, work with Dr. Irwin Goldstein, I highly, highly recommend him. A matter of fact, when I was at your office, there was people that were speaking all sorts of languages, and it seems like people were coming from all over the world. One of the guys that was in there happened to be from Australia or something, and he flew down to see you. You seem to be pretty international now.
Well, so again, as we focus in this, we take care of the problem. But someone put our name on the PropitiaHelp.com site, so that's widely read. And the gentleman who spent his time and energy making that website needs to be congratulated and honored and given some award. It's become a real region where you can learn about this condition in sort of one place. An amazing amount of effort has gone into that website.
That's PropitiaHelp.com?
I believe that. I don't visit very often, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's called, yes.
Okay. And then, you know, here's one last question before we let you go. I know you have a busy schedule. People are saying that they're getting better by fixing their gut microbes or their gut lining. That's the new thing. I'm seeing a lot of posts about fixing your diet and fixing the bacteria in your stomach. What are your thoughts on that? Have you heard anything about that?
So I actually haven't, and I haven't seen much data in general on other management strategies, traditional medical ones versus the one you're talking. It could be that it's very important. If it is important, it needs to be documented and written up so we could all learn. I'd be very happy to help people by doing that if someone could explain the mechanism and why. So our traditional focus is hormonal, getting the hormones in working order as they would have been prior to taking finasteride, and then finding what's missing. So for libido, we now have drugs that raise dopamine and raise oxytocin and raise norepinephrine and inhibit serotonin. Those kinds of things, to me, if there's a rational mechanism for helping a PFS symptom, then we should engage in that. I don't know much about the microbe treatment.
Okay, fair enough. And one last question, which is for the men that are listening and that they're going through their crash, what would be a word of advice that you'd give them right now that would be immediately like beneficial for them, if there's anything?
Yeah, so again, sadly, we don't have an awful lot of data to give people a lot of advice, but if your life quality is off, if this is bothersome and distressing, find somebody to work with who you can communicate and trust and make every effort to realize a better life quality through interventions. And there is no one group of interventions the same for one person versus another person. So that gets you into, your trust and ability to be with that doctor or healthcare provider going forward. We're in uncharted territory, but the most important thing we could do, I guess, is just recognize the existence of the condition and use logical and rational behavior and explain risk-benefit ratios of an intervention, and it's going to help me or hurt me. One of the more obvious issues with anyone with PFS is that their sensitivity intellectually to taking more medication. They say, wow, I took a medication, it gave me a side effect, and here you are, Dr. Goldstein, you have six other medications that you're thinking of. What are you doing to me? What about those drugs and their side effects? And I'm very sensitive to that, and I appreciate the concern, and we have to be patient with this population. It's tough, but you got to pursue and persist and help people.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me when I sat with you. I said, "Oh, great! You just told me this drug really completely screwed everything up for me. Now you want me to take more drugs?" But absolutely, there was a huge sensitivity, and you actually said that before. You said, "Hey, I may put you on some drugs." So that's that was really important for me. And so here, I know this podcast is probably going to be one of the biggest podcasts. You're pretty well known in the community. I'm guessing I'm going to get a lot more questions, different questions, unusual questions. Would you be open in the near future to do another one with different questions?
Absolutely, Amir. I didn't know how this would go. It's going well, and we could do them regularly. And as long as you get to work with Sue and get them into the schedule, it'll be perfect.
Well, thank you so much.
Then we could do live patients and more specific situations, like someone who has like a specific erection problem or libido problem or Peyronie's problem or brain fog problem or, you know, panic or mood or, we dealt with a specific symptom, and then I could give you strategies that we're currently using. And if I could learn from people that they're using and getting success, perfect. Let's teach us all.
I will take you up on that offer, and I think that will be a great idea to get some callers in and see where it lands from there. And again, we had Dr. Irwin Goldstein on our podcast today. And for anyone listening and has any questions, you can feel free to email me at pfsglobalradio@gmail.com. If you want to get a hold of Dr. Irwin Goldstein, how can they get a hold of you?
So I do these courtesy triage calls, so I don't mind doing that. So they would call 619, our office, during San Diego office hours. So you'd have to check that out on the internet where you are. So it's 619-265-8865, and you can schedule a 10-minute courtesy, what I call triage call, and we can discuss issues with you.
And for anyone listening, I would highly take him up on that offer. He completely, you know, from a personal level, changed my life, and I'm not saying that lightly. He's an incredible person outside of just being, you know, outside of being a doctor. He's a wonderful human being, and he's been so instrumental in me getting better. So, again, Dr. Irwin Goldstein, thank you so much for your time. We are done. Wow, that went by so fast.
Bless you doing with this, and you're working on a great cause. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, you heard that here, and I want to thank everybody for joining us. If you have any other questions or if you want to be on the show with Dr. Goldstein, please email me at pfsglobalradio@gmail.com. I'll take your questions in, and hopefully we can set it up. And once I set it up, I will put it up in some of the websites. This one was kind of off the cuff, and I hadn't put it up early enough. But I will put it up on the next one, so people can throw in their questions. If you want to be on the radio, and you can be anonymous, you don't have to say your name, I would be more than happy to have you on the show. And you can talk to Dr. Irwin Goldstein yourself, which, again, it's a very special treat to be able to get on the line with someone that's so knowledgeable in this field. I want to thank everybody again for joining us on this session of Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to PFS Global Support, where we offer coping strategies to thousands upon thousands of men afflicted with post-finasteride syndrome. We're here to share your experiences across borders and learn firsthand how finasteride can negatively impact not only those who've taken the prescription medication, but their loved ones as well. Together, we can tackle PFS and put an end to this growing epidemic for future generations.